Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is a Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Emilio San Pedro, and at 14 hours GMT on Tuesday, these are our main stories. Germany and Japan have both reported cases of the new coronavirus in people who haven't been to China. Britain is to allow the Chinese company Huawei to have a limited role in the development of its 5G mobile telecoms network. And the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is formally indicted for alleged corruption. Also in this podcast, our reporter takes us to the melting Antarctic glacier that is raising global sea levels.
Sometimes the weather is like this. 40 mile an hour winds, ice flowing off the ice shelf, even though it's actually quite warm, -1, -2. I'll tell you, it is fresh out here.
And Ethiopia is trying to crack down on illegal wildlife smuggling, including people who demand cheetah cubs as pets.
Monkeys, all types of exotic birds, a lizard. Humans, you know, they want the most exciting pet, and therefore it's driving the illegal wildlife trade in Ethiopia.
That's all coming up. But first, as China continues to work to tackle the new coronavirus, which has already claimed the lives of more than 100 people, Germany and Japan have now both reported cases of the virus for the first time in people who haven't been to China. And in other developments, the head of the World Health Organization has flown to Beijing for urgent talks with the Chinese president. Russia has closed a large stretch of its border with China, and Hong Kong's leader, Carrie Lam, wearing a face mask, announced new travel restrictions.
One of the keys to controlling the epidemic is to reduce substantially the flow of people between the two places. In other words, we are not just talking about mainland visitors to Hong Kong, but also Hong Kong travellers to the mainland, and the number of commuters must be reduced substantially both ways.
Our correspondent in China is Robin Brandt.
Chinese experts believe they are entering a stage now where the virus will be stronger and will spread more quickly. They believe that for every one person that has it, they are infecting another 2 to 3 people. There is evidence as well that people are spreading the disease before they themselves present with any symptoms, so that makes it very difficult to gauge the spread of the disease. And there's still this debate about the incubation period. How long is it before symptoms are presented in people? The Chinese think it's between 1 and 14 days. But we are getting a sign, evidence of the slow spread of the virus abroad. You've talked about Germany. I think that's a case involving someone who had a family member who passed through Shanghai, from where I'm speaking to you from at the moment, and that's related to a family in Wuhan as well. We have a case in Japan, which is very interesting in the last few hours, a bus driver reportedly who has contracted this type of coronavirus. He himself didn't have any direct contact with Wuhan. He hadn't been there, but he was in charge of a tour group of Chinese tourists, we understand, from Wuhan, and the suspicion is that is how he contracted it.
Now, the Chinese authorities are obviously the ones under the highest level of pressure at the moment to deal with this. Is there a sense that they can stem the tide?
Well, they're trying, but, you know, look at what's happening yesterday in terms of extending the Chinese Lunar New Year holiday break. That is a hugely significant measure designed to basically try to contain the virus by stopping up to 500 million people getting on planes, trains and buses and returning to their homes and their workplaces. Look at what Hong Kong is doing there in the last few hours. This is part of the country of China, which is essentially cutting itself off from the mainland because it fears the spread of this type of coronavirus there. So Hong Kong is basically cutting off 80% of the access points to Hong Kong from the mainland. Half the flights are being cut. It's also saying no more personal travellers to Hong Kong. So those measures are pretty severe, and I think that is a good illustration of how serious some officials, certainly at the senior level, are taking this.
Robin Brandt, well, as governments and world bodies try to plan for all eventualities, how are the millions of ordinary Chinese people coping with the isolation they find themselves in? If you live in an affected area, the chances are you're in a virtual lockdown in your home, not going to work or socializing, as our China media analyst Carrie Allen explains.
The Ministry of Education released a new statement today saying that the school period is suspended indefinitely until the spring semester. So a lot of children are stuck at home, particularly in Hubei province where this all started. There's an attempt now to try and create online classes so that students can carry on studying. So this is one of the measures that's looking to go ahead. But also bear in mind that this is affecting children. There are also the parents who are now struggling to get to work if their children are staying at home. So what's happening as well as this is that banks around the country are looking to subsidise people who can't get to work and making sure that, say, for example, they've got rent or mortgages to pay. This is factored in and that they don't have to pay on time.
This inability to go out must also raise mental health concerns. And what about any criticism of the way the Chinese government is handling this?
Yes, mental health, absolutely. In fact, there have been hotlines set up around the country so that people can ring. In China, if you go to the doctors, you don't make an appointment ahead of time. You just turn up. So physical and mental health hotlines have been set up so that if people are concerned and they have anxieties, they have somebody that they can talk to. So, yeah, this is one of the ways that measures have been stepped up. But, I mean, I know just speaking to friends in China that they are concerned that some supplies, for example, masks, they can't go out and they're being told that they really should not go out without a mask.
Carrie Allen, Britain has decided to allow the Chinese telecoms giant Huawei to have a limited role in the development of its 5G mobile telecoms network. It's a decision that's been agonized over in many countries because of fears over potential espionage. The U.S. is highly suspicious of Huawei and is calling on governments to lock the firm out of 5G networks, concerns which China rejects. Here's our security correspondent, Gordon Carrera.
Today's National Security Council meeting, chaired by the Prime Minister, lasted less than 90 minutes and ended with the decision many had expected. Huawei would be allowed to play a role in 5G, but with significant restrictions. The company will be excluded from the most sensitive core of the network, which directs where data moves, only operating on the periphery in technology around areas like mobile phone masts. Even there, it will not be allowed to operate at sensitive locations, such as nuclear sites and military bases, and its share of the market will be capped at 35%. These were the requirements security officials said were needed in order to manage the risk. But the decision is unlikely to quiet a range of critics, including in the Prime Minister's own party and also in Washington, where the Trump administration has been pushing for a total ban on the company. The US has warned that the deal could affect intelligence sharing.
Gordon Carrera. Israel's Attorney General has filed a formal indictment against the Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. It comes after the Israeli leader dropped a bid in Parliament seeking immunity from the charges of fraud, bribery and breach of trust. From Jerusalem, here's our Middle East correspondent, Tom Bateman.
The submission of a 78-page indictment from the government's top lawyer marks the official start of Mr. Netanyahu's prosecution. It is the first time a serving Israeli prime minister has been formally charged with criminal offences. It is the latest twist in a day of fast-moving events which may determine Mr. Netanyahu's fate ahead of an election in March. He is casting himself as a national statesman during a formative moment for Israelis. He's in Washington for President Trump's so-called peace deal proposals being boycotted by the Palestinians. And after he tried hard to shield himself from prosecution, Mr. Netanyahu ditched that attempt on Tuesday morning, just hours before the start in Jerusalem of a parliamentary debate on his immunity, which he was expected to lose. His main rival in the election campaign, Benny Gantz, said Israelis had a clear choice between a PM who would work for them and one preoccupied with himself. Mr. Netanyahu is accused of accepting bribes and pressuring media owners to change news stories about him. He denies the claims, calling them a politically motivated witch hunt.
Tom Bateman. The Supreme Court in India has allowed the introduction of African cheetahs to a suitable wildlife habitat in the country. The judges said an expert committee would submit a report to the court every 4 months. Our South Asia editor, Ambarasan Ethirajan, has more details.
India first proposed plans to bring cheetahs to its nature reserves around 10 years ago. The Asiatic cheetah became extinct in India in the early 1950s. For centuries, the animals were kept as pets by Mughal kings and other royals. But indiscriminate hunting and capture brought an end to the cats. India tried to bring Asiatic cheetahs from Iran, but the plan did not succeed. The wildlife authorities are now planning to get the cats from countries like Namibia. But conservationists say the reintroduction of cheetahs is not a great idea, as none of the wildlife habitats in India are big enough to house the animals. They say the cats need an antelope every third day to survive. They also argue that the African cheetahs and the Asiatic cheetahs are genetically different.
Ambarasan Ethirajan. Well, India may be about to officially bring in African cheetahs, but in East Africa, they're struggling with illegal smuggling of wildlife, including trading in cheetah cubs. In the last couple of weeks, Ethiopia has introduced new forensic technology to tackle the trade. My colleague Tom Hagler spoke to Greta Lori, who is a pioneer of wildlife conservation in Ethiopia.
Ethiopia is one of the prime areas where live cheetah cubs are taken from in the wild to kind of supply the Far East, Middle Eastern market for exotic pet trade.
And this is just what members of the public, they go to a market and they can pick up a cheetah cub, or it's for circuses or for what?
No, it's absolutely elusive. It's really an illegal trade where we very rarely find these markets. It's more that they're being trafficked by porous borders across the port in Djibouti and into Saudi Arabia, the UAE, which are huge market spaces for cheetahs and exotic pets. And you'll see that a lot on social media now, with really wealthy individuals or influencers having pets that are cheetahs or leopards or lion cubs, just really for them, you know, having a little bit of a different kind of pet.
And they go for a lot of money, I guess.
Absolutely. It is definitely a prime cost, first of all, because they're not easy to find. And more than anything, they're paying a lot to get them out of the country.
You got any idea how much?
I have no idea, because we get different figures from the traffickers that we apprehend or some of the informants that we speak with.
Right. And it's not just cheetahs. There are lots of exotic animals, are there, so-called, being taken out of Ethiopia?
Absolutely. Monkeys, all types of exotic birds, lizards. So, yes, humans, you know, they want the most exciting pet, and therefore it's driving the illegal wildlife trade in Ethiopia.
Right. Now, Ethiopia seems in the last couple of weeks or so to be very keen to clamp down on all of this. I know it's only just sort of started. Is it possible to tell how well it's going?
To be honest, yes, they've always been really keen on collaborating to end the trade because, again, the wildlife trade is just symptomatic of a bigger criminal network. The traffickers are not usually just trafficking in wildlife. They're trafficking in drugs and other illicit products. So they've always been keen on trying to end it. But I think now they're realizing that if they cooperate with people like us that might have more information on wildlife, they'll be able to crack down on the general criminal networks.
And what exactly are you and they doing then?
So myself, I focus on wildlife specifically, and I like to get in and speak with local communities, which are usually some of the best informants, because they don't consider wildlife a crime, and therefore they'll be able to reveal a lot more information. And that will lead us to really big seizures of not just wildlife, but other criminal and illicit products as well. In the greater part, we've never really used forensics in Ethiopia itself, as we don't have forensic labs for wildlife species, and other than forensic labs for humans. Now, how forensics is going to play a big part in this is that we can use data on exactly where that animal might have been poached, where it comes from, which helps us really identify the networks that are passing through the country.
So overall, the big picture is things are changing, you feel, perhaps for the better.
Absolutely, absolutely.
The conservationist Greta Lori. You're listening to the Global News Podcast. Still to come, President Putin is due to step down in 4 years' time, but will he really exit the stage?
Everybody believes that he's going to participate in political process and to have some control, but we don't know in what form and how it will be.
And lawyers who represent some of Jeffrey Epstein's alleged sexual abuse victims have criticized Prince Andrew for not cooperating with an investigation into the dead financier. Since the 1980s, the Thwaites Glacier in the Antarctic has shed 500 million tons of ice. Now the biggest scientific field project in history has confirmed fears that the glacier is melting increasingly quickly. Our chief environment correspondent, Justin Rowlatt, travelled for 2 months in Antarctica with the science teams.
Kilo Bravo X-ray, skiway 25, cleared for takeoff.
It takes hours to fly across the West Antarctic. There is more than 3 metres of sea level rise locked up in the ice sheet here. The weakest point is Thwaites Glacier. Thwaites is massive and is collapsing into the sea in a chaos of ice at up to 3 kilometres a year. Keith Nichols of the British Antarctic Survey is one of the lead scientists on the project.
The biggest uncertainty is associated with the Antarctic ice sheet. That's the one we know least about, and the one that has in some ways been excluded from estimates for the future simply because we know so little about it. All we know is it is going to contribute to sea level rise. What we don't know is how much and how quickly it'll contribute to sea level rise.
That is because it is so hard to do science here. This is the stormiest region of the stormiest continent on Earth.
Sometimes the weather is like this. 40-mile-an-hour winds, ice flowing off the ice shelf, even though it's actually quite warm, -1, -2. I'll tell you, it is fresh out here.
Hello!
It took 5 weeks just to get the science teams and their equipment to the front of the glacier. Only 4 people have ever been here before, and they were the advance party for this year's project. The scientists need to melt 10 tonnes of snow. They use a bank of boilers to heat the water to just below boiling point, then spray it onto the ice to melt a hole.
This is a historic moment, the first time anyone has tried to drill down through this glacier. Beneath the 600 metres of ice below me is the most important point of all, the point at which the ice meets the ocean water.
They even launch a bright yellow robot submarine called Icefin.
The most important sensors on the vehicle are actually measuring the characteristics of the water.
Brittany Schmidt is from Georgia Tech University.
It tells you where the water formed and where it's coming from and how much potential it has for melting.
The ice isn't going to vanish overnight. It will take decades, possibly centuries. But this research has already shown it is melting, and that will mean huge changes for us all in the years to come.
Justin Rowlatt. Investigators in the US are looking at whether foggy conditions played a factor in the helicopter crash that killed the basketball player Kobe Bryant and 8 others. The helicopter came down on a hillside west of Los Angeles on Sunday. Jennifer Homendy is from the National Transportation Safety Board.
There wasn't a black box. And there isn't requirement to have a black box on this, so there was no CVR, no FDR. There was an iPad where for flight, which is essentially a flight plan, weather briefings, and the pilot uses that in flight. We'll be looking at other avionics on the aircraft to see what information we can gather, and then we're going to be looking for other electronics.
Our correspondent in Los Angeles, David Willis, has more.
One of those problems that's been confronting the investigators is how to deal with the thousands of people who want to pay their respects to Kobe Bryant. And in actual fact, there's this makeshift memorial here at the Staples Center, which is the home of the LA Lakers, the team that Kobe Bryant played for with such distinction for more than 20 years, winning 5 NBA titles along the way. But at that site, that crash site, which is about 30 miles from here, in a very remote hillside, they are picking through pieces of the wreckage of that helicopter, trying to find out what caused it to come down so suddenly. One crucial suggestion that the weather may have been involved is the fact that the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, has brought in a weather expert. In actual fact, it was very foggy when Kobe Bryant's helicopter took off, and the pilot actually had to gain special clearance to fly. Police and rescue service helicopters at the time were grounded because of the state of the weather conditions. So clearly there's a thought that the weather may have played a key part in this tragedy.
David Willis, and we would really like to apologise for a mistake on yesterday's podcast. In our reporting on the death of the basketball legend Kobe Bryant, we used a clip which we mistakenly said was of Shaquille O'Neal. This was actually an audio clip from the video of another Lakers legend, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, that he had posted on social media. The podcast sourced the wrong man, and that's a clear mistake for which we are very sorry. Thanks to all of you who brought this to our attention, particularly Ben Samaye, Tyler Butte, Tristan Rockcliffe, and Stephanie Arias, a quien le mando un cordial saludo. A lawyer who represents some of Jeffrey Epstein's alleged sexual abuse victims has criticized Prince Andrew after he was accused by a prosecutor in New York of offering zero cooperation to the inquiry into the billionaire sex offender who took his own life last year. The Queen's son has denied having sexual relations with a woman who claims she was introduced to him after being trafficked to London by Epstein. But the lawyer Gloria Allred told the BBC she'd subpoena him if he visited the US and urged him to meet the American investigators.
These victims have been suffering for years. So I always said about Prince Andrew, you know, not words but deeds. Go ahead and speak to law enforcement. And now, what's he going to do? Not respond to the press about it? Just try to avoid and evade? This is not going to be acceptable.
Buckingham Palace has declined to comment on the claims that Prince Andrew isn't cooperating. From outside the palace, Andy Moore reports.
Nothing from his legal team some 14 hours after this statement was first made in the States. So we don't know if there's been some sort of misunderstanding, if Prince Andrew will make a statement at some stage, or whether, as the American prosecutor suggests, it's a flat no, we can't help. I suppose you could say that so far from Prince Andrew's legal team in UK so far, there's been zero cooperation with the British media. It was interesting that that statement was made outside Jeffrey Epstein's manor, that big distinctive wooden door, that same door you saw in my report there, Prince Andrew peeking out of as he said goodbye to an unidentified woman. That was back in 2010 when Prince Andrew went to New York. He said he went there, it was a matter of honour to tell his old friend that he could have no longer a relationship with him. The American prosecutor said the criminal investigation there was moving at pace, that those were his words. And he said it also involved co-conspirators, though he didn't identify any of them.
Andy Moore. It's almost 2 weeks since Russia's President Vladimir Putin used his State of the Union address to announce the biggest constitutional reform in Russia in a quarter of a century, and loyal officials have been moving at speed to implement his changes. The proposals involve a redistribution of some powers between president, parliament, and prime minister that many see as an attempt by Mr. Putin to retain influence after his last term in the Kremlin comes to an end in 2024. His next move, though, still isn't clear-cut, and the changes have left many analysts in Moscow scratching their heads over Mr. Putin's real plans. While the capital tries to work out what lies ahead, our correspondent, Sarah Rainsford, has traveled out to the small lakeside town of Pereslavl to see what people there make of what's happening and of the possibility that Mr. Putin will never quite step back from the political scene.
As you drive into Pereslavl, there's a giant concrete hammer and sickle by the side of the road that it seems no one ever bothered to remove. We've already passed a man with a sign declaring that the USSR never legally ended. Russia politics is rarely boring, but right now it's livelier than usual. The car radio is a reminder of how 2 weeks ago Vladimir Putin used his annual State of the Nation address to announce the biggest shake-up of the constitution in over two decades. He then promptly sacked his entire government. Political watchers have been tying themselves in knots ever since, trying to interpret things.
I'm Kirill Rogov, the vice president of the Liberal Mission Foundation. Everybody believes that he's going to participate in political process and to have some control, but we don't know in what form and how it will be.
It's all about Pexit, in other words, Russia after Putin. And in Moscow, that's big news. But I wanted to know what the people of Pereslavl made of it all, just a couple of hours away. A town full of churches, it's a picturesque place that's now full of downshifters from the capital.
Studying English by reading Agatha Christie and later mostly by playing computer games.
But Father Panteleimon told me the Muscovites and locals live in parallel worlds.
In Pereslavl many people live not a rich life. There are a lot of surrounding villages where they have almost no work.
So, round the back of his monastery, he helps people out, distributing clothes and baby food, nappies and all sorts to anyone in need. Maria's there picking through a pile of jumpers, heavily pregnant with child number three. She tells me she did hear something about Mr. Putin's big speech, but only the part about welfare. Her mum, Nadezhda, caught a bit more about the politics. I did used to follow things, she tells me, but to be honest, I mainly think about how to survive now. As for Putin, he's okay. Looking for another take on town life, we dropped into a session at the local parliament. The session's a lively one, but the deputies here aren't bothered by lofty constitutional matters either. They're far too busy trying to trace millions of missing rubles from the town budget. When the chairman does mention Mr. Putin's speech, one of the deputies announces bluntly that he didn't listen to that at all. Just down the road is school number one. And outside, in the snow, I chat to some of the mums as they wait for their children. I wonder whether Olga thinks 20 years is long enough for Mr. Putin to be in power.
Is it time for a change? Maybe. I'm pretty neutral, and I don't think our leaders actually care what we think. But let Putin stay, I guess. Things are stable, calm. And who knows what could happen next.
Yulia admits her TV's tuned into cartoons these days, not the news. So what if Putin stays, I ask her.
I don't know any other candidates who could replace him. I can't name anyone else who stands out. I like the general direction he's taking things.
It's hardly a ringing endorsement after two decades in power, but it's no rejection either. Pereslavl is unlikely to rise in revolt, it seems, when Putinism outlives President Putin.
Sarah Rainsford. And that's all from us for now, but there'll be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. And if you want to comment on this podcast or the topics covered in it, do send us an email. The address is globalpodcast@bbc.co.uk. I'm Emilio San Pedro. Until next time, goodbye.
The Compass is the podcast from the BBC World Service that really gets under the skin of a story.
I can tell you what I believe is not the truth, and you know it's not the truth, and I'll get away with it. So I will tell a lie.
With series that take an in-depth look at how the world today really works.
Sometimes I think that we are moving into the right direction and change is happening. And then I realize that 9 to 10 women get killed every day in this country. So I don't feel we're moving forward at all.
And why things are the way they are.
I have been socialized to be a soldier, to be someone aggressive and even to dominate, especially women or other people. So I have this kind of fear that, well, if I one day become a violent person.
The Compass Podcast from the BBC World Service.
She shamed the politicians into taking an interest in it.
Search for The Compass wherever you get your podcasts.